Peter?
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I want to ask you, are you an oracle? Well, we're all oracles. We can do a better job at it. We could be more conscious about our oracle nature. And maybe that's what we'll do in the show today. How about that? Let's talk about becoming better oracles. And to do that, there's a wonderful book called The World is Your Oracle, Tapping Your Inner Wisdom. That's wonderful. And the author is our guest today, Nancy Vedder Schultz. Nancy, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
I'm so glad that we can talk about this because I think all of us can sensitize ourselves more and more and more and live. I always say I live a multidimensional life, and I think we all should see ourselves that way and understand how we can do a better job. And your book is full of ways to do it.
Thank you. Yeah, that is my hope with this book, that it really helps people to begin to see their lives as the adventure that they are and to see them and hear them and feel them, depending on which of those senses is their primary intuitive sense. And the subtext is to really live life in an exciting, you know, meaningful way, because tapping into your inner wisdom almost by definition helps you to see the meaning in your life.
Well, the book is about how to find it. You know, in other words, some of us can think, okay, I'm going to tap within for my wisdom, inner wisdom, and, you know, kind of, it's like the universe is within, so we tap into the greater consciousness of the universe by going within. But the good news, and what you show in your book, is that the universe presents itself in all of reality.
Exactly.
And the more that we can journey through life witnessing this greater universal knowledge that's holographically embedded in everything.
That's a good way to put it.
And sensitize ourselves to it. You know, become aware. It's a mindfulness. It's an openness. It's a receptivity to sensing in ways that we don't always realize we can find that knowledge. And these hits of insight that come from so many different objects in the world and activities in the world. And your book is filled with, you have 40 different methods
right, of
tapping this.
I think part of the problem in our culture is that we have a lot of dualisms, and the one that is appropriate in this, or inappropriate actually, in this situation is the dualism of inside and outside. When we tap into our inner wisdom, we're tapping into the universe, which of course is outside of us as well. So that inside-outside division gets in the way. But these 40 techniques help us to realize that to pay more attention to what's happening in our lives and to see the birds in the air, to listen to the waves next to the shore, to feel the wind in our hair, and to see all of those things as potentially a way of tapping into our inner knowing. And
well,
what happens is a co-creative process. Each of these divinations gives you, the world comes to you with some information, but you have to come to the world with your ability to interpret, imagine. Imagination really is part of it. Coming with your imagination to the world that's bringing you these gifts of information and wisdom.
Right. It's messages.
Exactly.
And we there's a message in everything, because as I said earlier, it's holographic. So, in other words, as without, so within, and et cetera, everything is part of the oneness of the universal consciousness.
Exactly.
And when we know that, then we can look for the hints and then use our imagination. People don't respect imagination enough.
That's right.
They think imagination is too fanciful and doesn't have enough worthiness to help us in our lives in ways that is really direct information.
Exactly. For me, one of the most shocking experiences of understanding or seeing somebody else understand the importance of imagination was when I was reading Karen Armstrong's The History of God, and she's pretty much a scholar, does a lot of research, and this book is really filled with all sorts of facts. But in the introduction, she said, I wish that when I had been in the convent, that my mother superior had told me that I needed to come towards God as he was coming towards me, that my experience of God wasn't going to just fall out of the sky. I needed to move towards it with my imagination. And she used the word imagination. I thought, oh, how wonderful that someone who's a researcher really understands that as well.
Of course, we hope so. So let's talk about more about what the different methods that you have, because you approach it through the different senses that we use, and some of us are better at some senses than others.
That's right.
And it's amazing how we operate that way. I'm much more cerebral, so I like to hear things.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing how things show up that way. And I can feel things, energy also. I'm not as strong a seer as I am a listener.
Right.
But other people are amazing at what they can see and identify. They see things happening in nature, and they get it. They understand it. And so we all have different strengths. And so going through your book, method by method, people will get ahas. Oh, yeah, I'll do that. Oh, I like that.
Yes, the backbone of the book is really that division. One-third of the techniques are visual, one-third are auditory, and one-third are kinesthetic. And people do gravitate towards one of those three senses as their primary intuitive sense. But sometimes there are things that you might want to try in the other sensory areas as well, because they can be useful as well. But I find, for instance, that in my life, I didn't think I was very psychic, because I'm certainly not a visual diviner. Like you, the auditory works for me, and sometimes the kinesthetic. I think actually we probably all have embryonic kinesthetic abilities that we can flesh out in a almost literal sense. But I think that we tend towards one of those three senses. And in my book, if you find one or two of these techniques that work for you, the book has worked. But if you're like me and you love novelty and want to riffle through the book and try a different technique every week, within a year you will have tried all of them, and that will be an interesting experience too. You'll know more about how you perceive the world and how you perceive your inner wisdom. But
right.
Yes.
Well, I found that some of them didn't appeal to me as much as others.
Well, I can imagine that as well, too. Tell me a little bit about that, Peter.
Well, it's just that I get turned on by different ways that you, different methods you talk about. And others, I look at that, and it just doesn't ring a bell. It's not what I do. And
it's interesting that you say ring a bell, because that tells me once again that your auditory and your divinatory proclivities. We use language that reflects our senses, and oftentimes in this culture we use a lot of visual metaphors and visual words, but in our culture, in our population, visual diviners are the least, they're fewer than any other type.
I know, and I teach intuition in my school, and I don't teach clairvoyance. Well, I've tried to in the past, and I've had experts who are clairvoyant come and help teach, and it's nice. You might get a glimmer of your aura occasionally, but what good is that? It's just, you know, a glimmer here and there. It's, you know, but yet you can turn on your hearing, and all of a sudden you're receiving messages.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, I love to go. One of my favorite techniques, I live on the shores of Lake Mendota, and my favorite technique is to go, if it's not winter, because here in Wisconsin there are 4 months when the lake is frozen, but if the lake is not frozen, I'll go down to the lake, and because I have, because I love water, and because I love the sound of the waves as they wash on the shore, and because I've already grounded and centered, which is an important preliminary for doing divination,
sure.
I am in a meditative state where I've let go of my anxiety about whatever question that I am going to ask. And pretty soon I start to hear the waves repeat a pattern that sounds sort of like words. And pretty soon I'm hearing the words in my mind and have an answer to my question. So it's not like Lake Mendota becomes a personality and answers my question. It's much more of a co-creation. But it has everything to do with the fact that I love the water and that I love living on this lake, and it calms me. One of the things that we've learned from science, because there's a chapter in my book about the science of divination, is that most of the time we come to issues where we're stuck and we're frustrated, anxious, upset. We're in these negative feeling states. And those are exactly the wrong feeling states to be in order to get new information to tap into your inner knowing. So grounding and centering, maybe just doing 3 to 5 minutes of meditation, or doing the Tree of Life visualization. That's one of my favorite ways. Will get you in a state which is more tranquil, maybe even joyful. And those are wonderful states in which to hear new information, see new information, feel new information.
And you have other ways, for instance, opening a book to any book, to any page, and look for the message in that.
Exactly. I love that. When I'm in a hurry, just grab a book off of my shelf, open it up, point to the page, and the words underneath my finger are the answer to my divination. Now, of course, then you have to figure out what that means. Sometimes those words are straightforward. They tell you exactly what you need to know. And sometimes they're metaphorical, and you have to start using what I call free association to figure out what the meaning is. And
or sometimes you'll find out later.
And that too. Yep. But I think the piece, there's several pieces in my book that are different. One is using senses to tap into your inner wisdom. Another is not giving pre-programmed answers like the tarot or I Ching or runes, which each one of them has a particular meaning. And the last one I think that's really important is that I give some information about how to interpret your divinations. And what I give six particular sentence questions, actually, to help you tap into your inner knowing intuitively and interpretively. So using free association, say, for instance, what you got in your divination was an image. Then you would ask either, what associations do you have with the image? Or how does this image relate to you? What links does this image have to your oracular question? What does the image mean to you? What feelings does the image evoke in you? What is the image trying to tell you? Now, these are questions that actually are aimed at the same answers, but one of them may be better for an individual than the others. So I just suggest
that also, this is great in to get going to do all this and to have these methods to ask questions about what you're sensing. And yet, I find that the more we do this, the easier it comes, the answers.
Absolutely.
You know, it's almost like we opened a door and the universe says, thanks for letting me in.
Exactly.
And then rushes through. And it's amazing how easy it is then, more and more that, you know, we do this to understand what we're being shown or told.
Exactly. I think that's, I was very much a rational person, or raised to be a very rational person. And when I started to realize that rationality was not the be-all and end-all in terms of wisdom, was actually while I was writing my dissertation as a PhD student. And I had these shocking but wonderful experiences, mystical experiences, while chanting with a bunch of women, and went, oh, wait a second. There are other ways of figuring things out in the world. It doesn't all have to be rational. So that was the beginning for
right.
me. So I am one of those people who went from rationality to greater openness to intuition. And I found it so thrilling, exhilarating, and invigorating. It really makes my life better in so many ways. Because sometimes
right, and what it is, though, is that you're tapping in to universal knowing versus the limited brain knowing that we have.
Exactly, exactly. Because we are all part of the oneness of the universe.
And people don't realize that that information is there. I mean, I realize it every day because I work with people in my practice,
exactly.
being intuitive, and I receive information about people who I'm working with that there's no reason I could know that or should know that. And yet I'm able to, you know, speak it clearly to people, and they look at me and go, there's no way you could know this unless you're tapped into something.
Exactly.
I love it. It's so, makes life so much easier when I can be, let's say, innocent about my brain. You know, I don't have to try to deduce everything. I just receive knowing.
And it's really a way to understand and grok that you're not alone in the universe, that you don't have to do it all yourself. It's that you're always in touch with something larger than yourself that allows
right.
you to feel much more confident and stand in your own power, because it's not
right.
just you.
The first time that I was conscious of being able to do this, the very first time I realized that there's a greater knowledge coming through me from outside my brain that knows what I don't know, and showed me in ways that were very clear that this is knowledge that I couldn't have had. At that moment, I said to myself, I'll never be alone again.
Exactly. Now, the thing is, when we talk like this, it's important for people who haven't quite gotten to the place or haven't allowed themselves to open up in this way, to realize that this is a process, that you start out with some basic divination techniques like the one we talked about, the opening a book or burning up a piece of paper with your question on it and then looking at the shape that the ash has taken. You know, something basic like that. And you can move more and more towards more open-ended types of divinations, which allows you to be, you know, realize that in the world and in your life, those types of things are happening all the time. But it's a process. You know, I've been teaching a lot of classes since the book came out. And one of the things that's interesting to me is how many people come in the classes and say, I don't have any intuition. I don't think I can do any of this stuff.
Right.
And I say, well, that's just fine. Just try and see what happens. And one of the women who was very insistent that she was not creative, not intuitive, by the end of the class, which was only 4 2-hour sessions, she was going, oh, my gosh. The world is so much bigger than I ever knew. I've been keeping myself small. I am just excited about what's going to happen for me now that I understand that there's so much more out here.
Right. It's amazing.
So I've wonderful.
I've had my school for 20 years.
Wow.
And so I've had thousands of students over those years. And so many times people come in and go, I'm just here out of curiosity. I can't imagine that I'm capable of this, but I just, you know, want to see what's going on. And, you know, they don't realize that why they got themselves there, because eventually, after a lot of self-denial, all of a sudden the floodgates open and these people become amazing.
Right.
And it's so wonderful to see people open up to their higher consciousness and get it.
Or deeper consciousness. I have difficulty sometimes with higher consciousness. It feels to be deeper. It's deeper in my body. It's deeper in my heart. And for some people, higher makes sense. So I always say higher or deeper, depending on, you know, the way you look at the world. That's another thing that's different about my book. I am very Unitarian Universalist in that sense. I don't talk about what the source of your inner knowing is. For me, I call my source the goddess. But some people might say it's God. For other people, it might be their guardian angel or their spirit guide or an ancestor that's been helping them. It could be many other things
sure.
as well. So
sure.
I try to make sure that that's not one of the things that I teach about.
Good. Yeah, I'm that way too. People say, well, where are you getting this information? I don't know. It comes through nice, doesn't it? So
another divination technique that I find works with everyone is journaling. Because even though I put it in the kinesthetic section, it really uses all three senses. When you're writing, you are obviously using your kinesthetic sense, but you also hear the scratching of the pen across the paper, and you see what you're writing. So using what I have done is adapted Julia Cameron's three morning pages, and I call it the third page divination. It is 2 pages of just writing about whatever you're thinking about. It doesn't have to have anything to do with your question. Just writing pretty rapidly, getting in the flow. That's what you want to do, is be in the flow. And then the third page, you write your question on the top of the page. And you may want to address it to your inner wisdom in some way, if you know what the source of your inner wisdom is. And then that third page is the answer to your question, and it's just amazing. I did Julia Cameron's morning pages for many years, and after a couple of years, I started to do exactly that. For me, it was, so Goddess, how shall I live today? And it was amazing, the messages I got, very often messages about joy, because I come from a very Puritan background. And going towards joy and what I love in the world, sometimes if I'm in that old place in my head, feels frivolous and unimportant. But of course, it's exactly what life is all about, finding the joy that life can give to us. So it's that I find is a wonderful divination. When I use it in any one of my classes, everybody gets some information.
No,
the other one that really works for everyone, of course, is dreaming. If, of course, you remember your dream. But dreams are such a wonderful source of information about what issues are up in your life and oftentimes how to deal with them. I was in a dream group for 12 and a half years, and even though we sort of became a gourmet vegetarian group as well, so we kept coming back for the good food, it was amazing to me how much information I got about, and this was in my 20s. When in your 20s, there are so many decisions you're making that seem to be absolutely the most important question in your life. And, you know, which job should I take? Which man should I marry? You know, things like that are pretty important. And it was so revelatory. I got so much information from the dreams that I recorded those years.
We're getting near the end of the show, and it's so much fun talking with you about this. Maybe sometime in the future we can do another show talking about our methods and experiences
that
can help inspire people. And because we want to turn more and more people onto this. To their, let's call it greater self, inner self, higher self, greater self.
Yes.
And live in a more holistic, universal way.
Yeah, so, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So people should pick up your book, The World is Your Oracle. And you are Nancy Vedder, V-E-D-D-E-R, Schultz, S-H-U-L-T-S. Is there a website?
Yes. My website is called mamasminstrel.net. And mama is spelled M-A-M-A-S, minstrel, like playing on your guitar as a minstrel, M-I-N-S-T-R-E-L. .net. When I was setting it up, I said, I'm not a com, I'm a net. I really think we're all part of the interdependent net. And so that's why I decided to be a net.
Good for you. That's great. So, Nancy, thanks so much for being on Energy Stew. It's really wonderful talking with you, and I look forward to talking with you again in the near future.
It was wonderful to talk to you, Peter. Yes, take care, and thank you.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.